Welcome, everybody. This is How to English, Teach and Learn with Gavin M.
It's a podcast about teaching and learning English as a foreign language.
All opinions stated are personal and references will be given when necessary. What's the title of this one, Gav?
This is episode 3, series 4, and the title is Accountability Partner.
Okay. Well, I was thinking reinvention.
Reinvention of the wheel?
Yeah, kind of. It kind of is. I mean, yeah, I think when we introduce our guest, we'll discuss it more. But I like the idea of reinvention of our jobs, of our roles as teachers, perhaps as learners too. It's changing all the time. So I like reinvention.
I like your title, Em. I maybe had a different topic in mind, but let's see where we end up by the end of this show.
Yeah, but we're calling it what I want to call it, okay? I think we'll talk about what you want to talk about.
We'll see. I think the followers already know the name of the title. We don't know because we haven't decided yet.
That is true, Gav. Our followers are almost like time travellers. So whatever we've decided to call it, it's an interesting topic.
For both you and me. Let's hope. Shall we begin by introducing our very special guest this week?
Yes, Gav.
This week's guest is Reinventress, who is an engineer-turned-English teacher who provides fun lessons for learners of English. You can find Reinventress on Instagram or YouTube under English with Reinventress, or you can go directly to her website, which is englishwithreinventress.com. where you can find an ebook to help you on your journey of effortless English speaking.
It was Reinventress's name that got me thinking about our roles and reinventing those roles. So really like the name. But yeah, Reinventress describes herself as an accountability partner. So what does that mean, Gav?
I'm not completely sure, but I think it might be somebody who supports you and gives you feedback, and maybe gets you back on board if you fall off.
Like a surfboard kind of thing.
Yeah, or if you're a train, maybe back on the tracks.
Nice. According to Wikipedia, an accountability partner is someone who supports another person to keep a commitment or maintain progress on a desired goal. So like what you said, Gav. They will also be a trusted friend or acquaintance who will regularly ask an individual about their progress. Accountability partners can interact through regular in-person meetings, through the internet, or through a mixture of interactions.
Well, after that very interesting description, Em, it would be wonderful to hear Reinventress. Let's go.
Hello, Gavin M, and all the wonderful listeners of How to English podcast. It's an honor to be on this show. I am Reinventress from India, an engineer turned English trainer, precisely Englinia, but I prefer to be referred to as an English speaking accountability partner who is on a mission to help 100,000 ladies learn English with fun and freedom. So, in case you are wondering how it all began, here is my backstory. I come from a family of first-generation learners and farmers, so I didn't have any exposure to an English-speaking environment, and I believe that's the case with most people from modest backgrounds. Although I studied in an English medium school and learn English as a second language, I always used to wonder how I became fluent in my native language, Hindi, without learning grammar rules in advance. But here, I was studying grammar rules and vocabulary lists day in and day out to learn to speak English, and I was still struggling to speak English fluently. Therefore, I observed a clear gap between real-world English and textbook English, where the focus is mostly on grammar lessons and vocabulary lists, which only prepare you for your exam and do not teach you how to speak naturally. In addition, I asked myself, why does language learning have to be boring and complicated? That's when I realized that even after studying English, I still found it difficult to speak naturally despite scoring well on English tests. So, I decided to bridge this gap and started working on myself, modeling those people who are already great at it. For instance, I was always fascinated by how Miss Word and Miss Universe are so articulate and what the secret to their speaking is. So, I underwent a training program with beauty pageant trainer Sabira Merchant and other TESOL trainer from London. All this led me to come up with the Achievable English system, which is based on learning English without memorizing grammar rules. Let's discuss that in brief. So here are my 5 steps to Achievable English. The first step is not to study grammar rules, as they kill natural communication. It's time to go on a grammar holiday. Now you might be wondering how to learn grammar without studying it. That's where the second step comes in, which is to learn grammar intuitively through stories and natural conversation, like we did when we learned our native language. In other words, observe sentence patterns. Third step is to learn phrases instead of words from the previous step, as this gives you free vocabulary and grammar. And all these steps are based on the fourth step, which is listening, which provides the foundation for speaking. That is, learning with your ears and not your eyes. Someone has rightly said, you can't be a good speaker until you are a good listener. Just like when we were small, we didn't speak for about 2 or 2.5 years before beginning to speak our own language. And do you know, that's known as silent period by linguists. Finally, all these steps help us to start thinking in English without translating it into our own language first, which is our 5th and final step. I hope it added some value to those who want to start their English speaking journey, because I believe language learning is not a few month or year course, but a lifelong journey wherein we learn every day from one another by honing our speaking skills every now and then, just like our native language. In case you need any help on your journey of reinventing your English speaking skills, you can connect with me on Instagram at English with Reinventress. And you can also check out my website at www.englishwithreinventress.com. The links are also given in my Instagram bio. Once again, I'm incredibly grateful to Gavin M for inviting me on their show. It's my daily dose of English learning through their podcasts. Indeed, you are doing a fabulous job. Until next time, cheerio and happy reinventing.
Well, it was an honor for us too, Reinventress. And thank you for your contribution. It was brilliant.
I really enjoyed learning from Reinventress's reinvention of teaching and learning. There were so many fabulous tips there, and I've made some notes, and maybe we can just discuss some of these points in detail, Em. And also, I'd like to discuss the topic of accountability partner and think about what our responsibilities are to our students, Em. What do you think?
Definitely, Gav. I really agree. It's a lot to take in, and it needs to be talked about. A lot of what Reinventress said really resonated with me and started me thinking. I love the way she's reinvented herself from being a traditional grammar teacher to this accountability partner who is there to support and have a real conversation with a student to make the language more memorable.
Absolutely. And from first-hand experience, where you spend a lot of your learning from books and just doing exercises, and then you try to produce the language yourself and you think, maybe this isn't the best technique. Maybe there's a different way of doing things. And I think she realised there is a different way and maybe a better way.
And what she described about this test system we've talked about before, it really is this passive knowledge that students can regurgitate onto paper or a list thing. And when students say, I'm good at English, I don't actually know what that means, whether that means they can pass a test, whether that means they can have a conversation that's natural, whether that means they can stand up and present something to lots of people. I mean, what does it mean to say you're good at a language? It's a huge spectrum. And I agree with Reinventress that the communication aspect for me is priority. And I have so many students that come to me at that point where they've learned to the maximum, maybe, what they can do from a book, but they can't really have a flowing, natural conversation that seems relaxed and easy for them. And they're constantly translating in their heads from their own language into English. And from my side, it feels quite artificial.
So they've got the foundations, but they don't have the method to take it to the next step, which is production in a natural and fluent way.
I think it's a hard one. And for a teacher, it's hard to know what to do with those students. I still, as I've said many times, Gav, I suffer from imposter syndrome because I feel like the students I have don't really want me to teach them. They want me to help them speak.
Hold on a second. You've got students who don't want you to teach them. What does that mean, Em?
I mean, in the traditional sense, they don't want, as Reinventress mentioned, they don't want a page out of a book. They've done that to the nth degree. They just want to have a conversation and produce something from their vault of knowledge. And from a teacher's side, I don't feel like that's enough. I feel like, oh, well, to be a teacher, I need to teach you something about grammar or, you know.
You need to do a gap fill.
I need to do a gap fill, or I need to give you a lot of words and lists and definitions. But I think maybe Reinventress has hit on what students really, really need now and what they will respond to. So what do you think it means, Gav, to be an accountability partner? What would that actually look like as a role? How would it work on a day-to-day basis? Give me what you think some examples are.
Well, going back to season one, episode one, first lessons.
That's a long, long, long time ago.
As I mentioned in the show, I always start the course by asking my students, what are your expectations? What do you want from the course? And they always tell me they want to learn some grammar, learn some vocabulary, and do lots of speaking practice.
I get that too. That does seem to be the standard answer.
But I find when I'm actually teaching them, if I pull out a worksheet or show them a matching exercise of some kind, their eyes tend to glaze over and they do the exercise, but I don't think they're enjoying it very much. Even if I try to explore the exercise more and ask them some questions that maybe relate more to them and gives them an opportunity to talk about themselves and their experiences, they still feel it's quite an artificial environment that I've created, and they're just waiting to go straight back to the conversation we had before.
Because it's in a framework, I guess, of this is us practicing this language that we've just looked at.
But this is what they kind of want, because after too many conversation lessons, they say, oh, teacher Gav, we want to do a bit more grammar and vocabulary. But then again, I pull out a book, we do some exercises, and I can see they're not really enthusiastic about these activities.
So they're flip-flopping a bit themselves. They see, the way I see, it's sort of what you expect or what you, your default, what you think you should do.
I think we were raised believing that we had to sit down in front of books and go page by page, unit by unit, doing the exercises, and that would provide us with the information that we need to be successful students.
So it really is a conflict of the student and the teacher that you feel drawn back to that prescriptive, very traditional method of learning and teaching. And maybe that is social pressure, or it's just, yeah, our backgrounds that have ingrained that in us. But this method that Reinventress is adopting, for me, is what I really want. And I think it's what my students really want. I just don't know if I can really jump in and completely do it myself, because I do feel pulled back to that. Oh, but we've done 4 weeks of talking, now we need to do some traditional grammar.
I think what Reinventress describes is how I teach, Em.
Yeah.
But you're right. I do sometimes have students who say, oh, I think I want to do some more grammar, some more vocabulary. So we switch back to the traditional method. But then soon we're back into conversation and stories.
Yeah, totally. And when I say to my students, maybe I have a group and the next week there was one student that didn't attend the lesson and I say to the others, oh, what did we do last week? I can guarantee you 9 times out of 10, they will say we talked about skiing or we talked about cooking. They won't say we did present perfect or we practiced conditionals, because what's in their memory is the content and the ideas. So it's strange. Maybe we're a bit of a cusp here, that we've got an old style of teaching and learning mixing up with this new style, and there is a bit of a pushback from the people that have experienced both. I'm not sure how the new teachers are coming up and their styles, but I feel like this is the 21st century style of teaching.
Perhaps we need to strike a balance between the two, Em, because I don't think our students are entirely ready to switch to a only orally based lesson. I think they still want to see those worksheets from time to time. And for the teacher to say, today we practice this, which I do try to remember, even if we have a very conversation based lesson. I say, okay, so did you notice we talked about this grammar? Maybe we did present perfect continuous. There were some conditionals in there. We looked at some prepositions. This does naturally take me into a quick question, Em, just an aside. How do you correct during these more spoken activities, if it's storytelling, if it's narrative based?
Well, it depends on two, maybe more. It depends on lots of things. Really depends on the type of student it is. I think I immediately sense from my students how they respond to my correction. And if I do stop them mid-flow, some of them are really happy to be corrected and are able to carry on without losing their flow. Others are happy to be corrected but have lost their flow and they can't remember what they've said. Others don't want to be corrected. They may say they do, but then they feel a bit affronted if you've stopped them, because you really see they're trying to communicate something.
So they're actually offended when you correct them and say, no, that's a hospital, not it's hospital.
Yeah. And that then brings me on to the next point. It really depends on the error. So if there is a word that I have no idea what it means because they've used the wrong word or a false friend, I might need to stop and genuinely say, I have no idea what that is. So then it's an very authentic correction, because you're saying, I can't follow you on this story because I don't know what that word means. But if they miss an article and say hospital, not a hospital, then I might let it go, because I know they know that grammar and they might just need to get through the story.
That's the problem, because if you interrupt them and say, hold on, is there a missing article there? And then they say, well, you've stopped me because I've made a mistake.
Yeah.
And I know what the mistake is. And then they just tell me, and then they look at me like to say, I think the context is more important here than the correction, Gav.
That's it. And you have to constantly, as a teacher, be weighing up which battles you're going to pick and whether it's worth correcting. And also sometimes that shock of interruption does work and stay in their memory. So
that could be a technique of correction and they might not make that mistake next time.
Exactly. But if you overuse that, it gets really boring and annoying and they don't feel like they're getting through. They're not saying what they want to say. It's hard.
And if what they're saying is littered with mistakes, you can't correct everything. So then in that case, the teacher has to decide, okay, this lesson, I'm going to focus on dependent prepositions. Next lesson, I'll focus on articles.
Yeah.
But you can't focus on everything, because then you will just completely interrupt the conversation and it won't flow at all, which is what probably the student wants to do, is to improve their fluency.
Yes. And it comes back to what you said earlier, that maybe if you just highlight things after the conversation or then say, well, you could have also said it this way, upgrading, that has its place too. But Reinventress doesn't really talk about corrections. I'm interested in the method of correction in this style of teaching.
And it's key to being an accountability partner, because it's our responsibility as the teacher to tell the student when they've made a mistake, because if not, then that's not a lesson anymore. That's just a conversation.
That's right.
And I know my students don't want that. They're not paying for just a conversation with a bloke.
Exactly. This is where it comes back to me feeling like an imposter, because I'm totally aware of the fact that this person or these people in this group are paying or getting their company to pay for lessons that I need to show up for and be professional and not just be there to have a conversation.
And as an accountability partner, you also have to choose the topics of the lesson.
So it isn't purely just having a chat, I'm realising. And we do so much more than maybe a traditional teacher with a course book would do, which means we choose the topic, we help the flow, we enable. I think enable for me is a really important word. Enable the conversation, enable the students to feel comfortable expressing themselves.
Can I ask you a little more about the topics then? Because I was talking to my students recently and said to them, there are topics that I'm interested in, but I don't know that you're interested in them and I don't want to push my interests on you. I'd like you to tell me what you like, but how often do you get students telling you the topics that they enjoy?
Well, often they don't even remember what they enjoy, especially at the beginning of the course. I think they're
students
overwhelmed.
Students don't remember what they enjoy? What do you mean?
Well, I might say to my students at the beginning of a course, what are your hobbies and interests? And they'll say, I just watch Netflix or something. And then 3 weeks later, it'll come out that they've got a woodwork shop in their garden or they've got this incredible interest that nobody ever picked up on. And so we've never talked about it. And yeah, they do surprise me. So it's not that easy just to say, what do you want to talk about and what are you interested in? It's great if you get students that do provide you with that, but most of the time I have to do the investigation to find out and then pick up on what they've said and think, oh, well, that sounds like they're interested in that.
Mm. So just using a variety of topics, you might hit on something the student's really into, and then you could have an amazing lesson with them.
Gav, would you like a tea?
You know I only drink coffee.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think that could be arranged.
Oh?
Followers, if you enjoy listening, watching or reading Gavin M's How to English Pod, visit coffee.com/How to English Pod.
That's coffee, ko-fi.com/How to English Pod. And it would be lovely if you bought us a tea or a coffee to show us support. You could even get a mention on our show if you'd like. Coming back to Reinventress's method of teaching M, I've written down the 5 steps that we should keep in mind while teaching. Step 1, don't study grammar rules. Now, this is very controversial. What are your thoughts here, Em?
Yeah, controversial, Gav. I would love to follow a student's progress from 0 to advanced on this method to see how it works. But it's really hard for me because I don't really teach beginners. I only have, I'd say, A2 lowest level students. And I would use this technique with anyone higher than A2 because I think, like we've said, I think this is what they need at that point. They've had a lot of academic study. They've looked at books and they've got it all there passively, but they just need to activate it, especially the nationalities I teach. That seems to be the style of teaching in a lot of countries that they do from school age, maybe even from kindergarten age, that they start very young and they learn from the book and they don't have opportunities to speak and practice using the language. So it really suits all of my students. I just am curious how it works with very low level.
Well, as Reinventress mentioned, that is how we learn our first language. So maybe it takes a bit longer, but it could be a deeper knowledge and it could produce a more natural language over a period of time.
Yeah, that's logical.
Of course, if you're only doing an hour and a half a week of your studies using this method, you might not see as much progress. Although I can see in step 2, there's learn grammar intuitively through stories and conversations. So even through conversation, through listening to podcasts and other things, you are learning grammar and vocabulary, but you're just not learning it the traditional method through structure and repetition.
Yes, and learning intuitively is a really good point. And Reinventress's 3rd step about learning language in phrases or chunks, I think, as well, is really, really important, not to just break every sentence down into its component parts. But I really, really want to talk about listening, which is point 4, because I see it with my students who say they watch a lot of TV programs or they listen to a lot of music. They are naturally better at speaking. And I don't think it's a coincidence. I started noticing a lot more, or I would actually ask them a lot more openly, do you watch TV at home? And it seems like such a by-the-by kind of question, you know, do you watch TV? Everybody watches TV. But no, some of these students don't watch TV in English. Some of them put on the dubbing, or they only watch movies in their own language. But the ones that are watching How I Met Your Mother every day are just better at communicating.
Em, I've noticed that too with my students.
And I think it really demonstrates this point that Reaventress made about the silent period. It really does feel a bit like when you're a child, where you're just watching and listening and taking it all in, and suddenly you can speak and have a conversation without really knowing why.
I often say to my students, where did you learn that phrase from? Where was that word from? How did you know that structure? And they just say, I don't know. I think I maybe saw it in a TV show, or...
I don't think they even know, Gav. I think they just know it. And it's so beautifully delivered, isn't it? It's like a little gift of language in a nice little box with a bow on top. It's all there, ready and fully formed.
It's amazing how it just fits perfectly without the students having to be conscious of rules and structures. It just comes naturally during the conversation.
Which leads us to step five, which is the thinking in English.
Start thinking in English, Reinventress told us. What does it mean?
Don't translate everything. And I can see it visibly in my students when I ask questions or they're trying to explain something and they're taking a long time. And often it's because they are word for word translating what they want to say.
And if they get stuck because they don't know a specific word, the students sometimes just stop and then they think, okay, I could just look it up in my favourite translation app.
Yeah.
But that's not what I encourage my students to do. I say to them, just describe it to me. I probably know, or one of your classmates knows. Let's just chat.
Yeah.
You wouldn't do that in a normal conversation with someone. Just pull out your phone and just say, hold on, I need to just translate or check this word.
No, it would feel really unnatural and odd. So we need to really bring in all these aspects into our teaching and maybe gradually do this, because I think if you are a very traditional teacher and you suddenly go in with this method, your students would not know what's hit them and might not like it. But I think there are lots of benefits to this method. Maybe if you just adopt a few. But Gav, what do you think? Do you have to dive right into this method, or can you just use a few things?
Maybe with your lessons, the teacher could be quite focused on a topic, and that means that the teacher can always be aware that the student's using the correct language and maybe upgrade the language in a very subtle way by repeating what the student said but correctly, or maybe using a new word and the student maybe will say, oh, what's that word? How do I use that? Mm. And then it's a kind of teacherly based conversation with the structure that you need to keep developing within the language.
More organic. I agree, Gav. It's getting away from that formula of do a page out of a textbook and then regurgitate what's on the page. It's more of a natural conversation, I think, where you are just pointing things out or saying, oh, I don't know what that means. Can you explain that word? Or as you would with anyone that you met that might be talking about something and make a mistake or get it wrong, you would naturally just say, what was that you said? Or how's that? Or I don't understand what that is. You wouldn't then say, oh, and I've got a page on that in this book, so we can work on it together.
And if the student challenges you and says, Teacher M, I would love to do a gap fill and matching exercise on this topic.
I would be tempted just to say, okay, I'll give it to you for homework.
Oh, M, I think you've hit the nail on the head. That is a homework exercise where you don't need your teacher looking over your shoulder while you're filling in gaps and matching words.
But I'm not sure Reinventress would agree with that.
In any case, Em, as Reinventress said, learning English is a lifelong journey.
Yes, and try new things is a really good take home from this episode. Let's mix it up a bit. Let's try different methods, see if it works, see if our students respond.
I really like this method. And as I said before, it's very much what I do. I am their accountability partner.
I'm sure your students are really improving. So for women looking for an amazing teacher, follow the link in our show notes to book your lessons with Reinventress.
Em, we've come to the final part of the show where we do our special feature. Do you remember what it's called?
I've kind of gone blank, Gav. This is totally us to think of a jingle and a section of the show and then for me to not remember it the next week. What is it?
It's learn a word.
Learn a word.
Learn a word.
Don't remember the jingle, though. We had a whole tune prepared and practiced. Every week's different with us.
Em, it doesn't matter. One, two, three. Learn a word. This week's word.
We're very out of sync, but go on.
This week's word is accountability.
Wow, that was exactly the word I was thinking of too, Gav.
No way. Maybe we should have done this feature at the beginning of the episode and then the followers would know exactly what an accountability partner is.
Probably would have been wise, but that's us. Here it is at the end.
Accountability is a noun, and dictionary.cambridge.org describe it as the fact of being responsible for what you do and able to give a satisfactory reason for it.
Right, so you could say that people who work in finance have accountability.
That's correct.
That means they can show evidence of their reports and where the information came from, and they can back up what they're stating. So how does that connect with what Reinventress is talking about, being an accountability partner for a student?
I guess it's very similar to having responsibility for your students.
Mm.
Meaning that you meet their requirements and fulfill the goals that they set out for you at the beginning of the course.
Okay. And we use words such as greater accountability, more accountability, increased accountability.
Or perhaps a lack of accountability if you're just not being responsible for your actions.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of the verb, Gav. Do we use a verb as an action for this? I think I'm getting a bit mixed up with to take into account, which is totally different. It just means to consider or to remember something, yeah?
No, Em, I think you're thinking of to account for something.
Oh, yes, that is the verb.
Which is to give a satisfactory record or explanation of something.
So it would be like saying, can you account for this missing money, Gav?
I would deny everything.
And you would have to be able to show me that you had no connection to it, I guess. Gav, I think we tend to use the adjective more. How does that work?
To be accountable for or to?
Ooh. Which one?
To be accountable to someone or for something.
Yes, but you can also be accountable for someone. I think with people, you can say accountable to or for, but the meaning does change a little bit, yeah?
So I'm accountable to my boss, but not for my boss, because I don't make my boss's dinner.
Yeah. So you report to your boss, and your boss gives you work and responsibilities.
Sets my goals.
Yes. So you are accountable to your boss. But if you were accountable for your boss, that would mean you were setting your boss's goals.
And being responsible for their well-being and other things like that.
So it is different if you use for or to. But you can only use for with things. You can't say to. So I can't be accountable to my dog.
No, because your dog's not going to tell you what to do.
Exactly. But I'm accountable for my dog, which means I look after my dog and I have my dog's best interests at heart. Which brings us to our students, Gav, I guess. We are accountable for them and perhaps to them. It's both, isn't it?
Wow. Can you explain how you're responsible for and to them?
Because we're trying to meet their needs, but they're also kind of like our boss. So we answer to them as well. So students are a bit of a interesting one. We're accountable for them and to them, I think.
And that's what makes them so important to us, Em.
Absolutely, Gav.
Other adjectives could be liable to and answerable to. Em, I found that very enlightening. And as an accountability partner to my students, I hope I can continue to support them in their lifelong journey of learning English. So thank you once again to Reinventress for sharing her story.
And it just occurred to me, Gav, maybe we should have a conversation about this with our students. And maybe we should ask them about the idea of having an accountability partner and if they would be willing to try it. Make it a conversation, I think, is a good start.
So, as accountability partners to our students, could we just quickly define our responsibilities? First of all, find out the expectations of your students. Secondly, maintain those goals using appropriate teaching methods. I think Reinventress has suggested a very good one there. And finally, keep the students on track by supporting them and
correcting them.
Precisely. And let's just have loads of fun learning.
Nice.
Em, thanks for this conversation. I think it's been really interesting.
It has, Gav. Looking forward to seeing you again.
See ya.
Bye.